south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's hit on some expat, gringo, gonna-be, and wannabe topics you won't hear anywhere else. This one concerning how much Latin cops will mess with you. Well, let me first say, you can expect they'll be messing with you all the time if you're on the tourist trail. And by the way, if and when you get hit up for a bribe, you never have to pay what they're asking. Everything's negotiable here in Latin America, including bribing the cops. And here's something you really have to know if you're driving here in Latin America. Now, some people will drive their car or truck down through Mexico, down to Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, whatever. Just know that because you'll have U.S. plates, when you're in a Latin country, you are a target to get pulled over and extorted by the cops. I've seen it myself. In fact, I remember one time I got pulled over near Cancun. It was one of those, you know, roadside stops where they're flagging you down and you have to stop, or you kind of have to stop anyway. Gringos will, because we're conditioned. If we don't, bad things will happen. But Latins sometimes just won't stop. They'll go right on by. Oh, and just remember, cops don't have gasoline for high-speed chases, so don't expect if you fly on by, they're going to come barreling down on you. I've never seen that happen yet. If there's a big group of cops flagging you down, normally they won't hit you for a bribe because there's just too many cops there, and there may be one or two in the bunch that are uncorruptible. Mostly, those will be the women. It's hit or miss, though. If one or two won't play ball with the corruption thing, the rest will back off. Anyway, when there's a whole organized row of cops pulling you over, they're more or less in the public eye, and there are too many people with smartphone cameras that might catch them in the act. But when you get pulled over by one or two cops, especially on a side road, then they usually have a plan going. Anyway, I got pulled over between Cancun and Playa del Carmen. That time I was driving a car with Costa Rican plates on it, and I noticed all the other cars they were pulling over had non-Mexican plates, so they let their countrymen go because, well, it's not good PR to extort your neighbors or people playing in your own sandbox. And of course, tourists and foreigners are out of their element, so they're easy pickings. Anyway, just know in whatever Latin country, if you're driving a car that doesn't have that country's plate on it, you're going to get hassled. Oh, and if and when you do get hassled, if you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail, it's never for a big amount of money. Unless you've done something really stupid, like go the wrong way down a one-way. And there's a cop right there in front of you, which isn't likely. And you know, going the wrong way down a one-way is par for the course for the locals. But if a gringo or foreigner does it, especially if you're driving a car with a non-local plate, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, meaning there's a cop right there, you're going to get nailed. Though I do remember, and this might have happened to you up in the States, if you're going the wrong way down a one-way street, it's happened to all of us. Well, in about 5 seconds, it's an oh sh** moment. There's a true adrenaline rush as you frantically look for a driveway to make a U-ey. And hopefully, no one's barreling down on you. Well, if you're down here in Latin America long enough, whether you're driving or you're a passenger in a car, that's going to happen to you. You're going to catch yourself going the wrong way because the roads are so badly and haphazardly marked. That means, oftentimes, the only way you know you're going the wrong way, that is against the traffic, is when you see up ahead, no taillights. And at night, only headlights. And it is much more likely to happen at night because during the day, the traffic is so heavy, in the cities anyway, you go with the flow. You can't help it because there's no other way to go. And at night, when there's little or no traffic and the roads are wide open spaces that you're just not used to, like I said, the signage is incomplete, sometimes non-existent, so you can easily end up going down the road ass backwards. Worse yet, those idiot, syphilitic-brained traffic engineers, if that's what you want to call them, are always messing around with the direction of the traffic because, especially in the larger cities, traffic congestion is a chaotic nightmare. And there's always some governmental fart-brained idiot making permanent, even temporary, directional changes on various streets. Believe me, it always makes things worse, especially if you're used to driving down certain roads and suddenly you turn and you realize something's wrong here. And that's why so many times I've been in a car with a gringo and he'll say, hey, is this right? Are you sure this is not a one-way in the wrong direction? Because, you see, in Latin America, they paint a lot of arrows on streets for the direction you should be going. But note, those maggot-brained road engineers will flip things around. They'll change the signs, but they'll leave the painted arrows there on the street. I've seen street signs contradict road arrows many times. But this is Latin America, and they'll get to it eventually. Sometimes in weeks, months, or never. Depends on the reported frequency of collisions since the idiot street engineers made the change. Which is why you usually have a pretty good argument if you get pulled over by a cop because you're going the wrong way down a one-way. It's pretty easy to prove there are no nearby road signs to that effect. However, if it happens on the gringo tourist trail, it probably won't matter. Road signs or not, they'll nail you for a bribe. However, if you're off the gringo tourist trail, you've got about a 95% chance the cop doesn't speak English, so you'll get off the hook simply because the cops rarely get a chance to talk to gringos. That's the gringo advantage. More than likely, he'll just shake his head, point which way you should be going, and use that most common phrase all Latinas and Latinos off the gringo tourist trail seem to know by heart. Nice to meet you. And he'll shake your hand. Which brings us to this email from David on that very subject. He says, Johnny, been a while. Hope you're doing well. Still a big fan of your show. Still, Dave? Anyway, he says, I thought you might be interested in this if you haven't seen it already. From what I hear, this scam is pretty common, especially in Costa Rica. Nice to hear they finally arrested a few of these cops. Then he sent this link titled the article, Police in Costa Rica Arrested in Brazen Extortion Plot Targeting Canadian Tourists. Probably because they're such nice guys and will open their wallets faster than U.S. gringos. It says, cops near tourist beach resorts in Costa Rica are accused of shaking down Canadians for bribe money to avoid bogus charges for not carrying their passports with them. Then it goes on to tell this story about two Canadian visitors, a married couple, traveling near Belen, Costa Rica, in the northwest region of the country. On November 14th, they were stopped at a police checkpoint, 30 kilometers from the area's resorts, about 250 kilometers from the capital, San Jose. There, they were stopped by two officers with the Fuerza Pública, a civilian police agency responsible for the majority of street policing in the country. They asked the Canadians to show them their passports. The Canadians said they weren't carrying them and didn't think they really had to. With that, the officers replied, not carrying your official passport in Costa Rica was a crime, subject to a fine. However, there's always a however, you know, this is Latin America, they said to prevent arrest and detention, they could pay a fine of $600 to them on the spot. The tourist Canadians told the officers they did not have that amount of money on them at the time. Then, the two officers offered to drive them in the police car to Philadelphia, that's with an F, the area's main city, around 10 kilometers away. Yep, they'd give them a lift to the nearest ATM machine. How nice of them, huh? Anyway, so they went, withdrew the cash, and gave it to the cops. But the real facts are this. According to the OIJ, that would be the Costa Rican kind of sort of analog to the FBI, in Costa Rica, it is not necessary to carry a passport. Anyway, after the incident, the Canadians, feeling aggrieved, told a local tour guide what happened, and he said that was simply a bribe, and they should file a complaint against the officers. Well, the two male officers, aged 48 and 31, were then picked up and charged with extortion, which means after they're processed and kicked out, they'll probably run for Congress. Haha, don't laugh. All right, thanks for that, Dave. A couple of comments here. Asking for a $600 bribe is very, very common in Costa Rica. In fact, some of their smaller traffic violations will cost you $500. Typical. And you know, as one friend of mine, a longtime resident of Costa Rica, said, the number one industry in Costa Rica is tourism. Number two, fining tourists for traffic violations. And number three, police extortion. Oh, and if you're interested, number four, sex tourism. That means the top four moneymakers in Costa Rica are directly attributable to gringo tourists. Not kidding. Meanwhile, off the gringo tourist trail, you might get hit up by the cops for the occasional bribe, but nothing like $600. In fact, last time the cops tried to shake me down was in Lima, Peru. I was walking down a street in a decent area. It was around 10 at night. There were three beat cops ahead walking towards me, and they stopped me and said, hey, let's see your ID. I said, okay, but why? I'm just a tourist staying at a hotel a couple blocks away. They said, oh, you have to be careful. This is the casino district. At night, lots of foreigners are walking in and out of casinos, have had too much to drink, and they get mugged. And in the moment, I thought, yeah, these guys are looking for a bribe, so let's see how much it is and whether it's worth paying. So I reached into my pouch and did pull out a copy of my passport. Then one guy said, where's the original? I said, in the hotel. He said, well, that's against the law. You have to carry your passport. Now, let me point out right here that my first mistake was that I spoke to these guys in Spanish. If I'd have just played stupid gringo and hit him with English the whole time, they probably would have let me just walk on by. Because, you know, very few locals in Lima, Peru, including the cops, speak English. The ones that do speak it are in and around Machu Picchu, you know, the gringo tourist site, 40 minutes to an hour by air from Lima. Anyway, when they told me it was against the law not to have your passport on you, I didn't want to argue with them, not yet anyway. I just said, how much is the fine? Something like 75 soles, around 20 bucks. Anyway, you can see right there, 20 bucks is a far cry from 600. And that's when I got in their face. I said, you know, the U.S. State Department has a website that says you never have to carry your original passport around, just carry a copy. But they weren't buying that. It was 3-1. Then they said, if I don't pay up, they're going to take me down to the police station. I said, okay, let's go. Then, get this. They looked at each other, a little pregnant pause there, and one of them said, all right, we'll let you go this time, but do carry your passport. This is our beat, and we'll be watching. Now, you longtime listeners probably remember me telling a similar story about 6 months or so ago. Same thing happened to me in Panama. This time it was two cops on a motorcycle. And that time I didn't even have a copy of my passport on me, so I gave them the 20 bucks. It was 20 bucks, could have been 10. Can't remember. Anyway, that's one very important thing you should know. You don't have to carry your original passport. In fact, I don't recommend it. Always carry a nice photocopy and a little flash drive with a good scan of your passport in it, too, if worse comes to worse. You can shove that into any computer USB slot and pull it up on the screen or print it out. Of course, you should always have that little USB stick encrypted in case someone steals it. You lose it, or as a lot of clueless gringos do, they go into a cafe internet or someplace that's got a computer station in a hotel, and they forget to take it out of the computer's USB slot. I'd say in the last couple of years, I've collected 3 or 4 various little USB drives when I've gone to use a hotel computer in the business area myself. That happened to you yet? I have to admit, I've done it myself, though luckily I've never been more than a few blocks away when the panic hits. Man, that's an adrenaline rush, huh? That's why you should always have that little spare flash drive with your ID documents and such on it, encrypted. That way, if you do forget it and someone gets a hold of it, like me, when I get home and stick it in my own computer because I'm nosy, there's no way for me to get at your files. All right, back to Costa Rica in a second, but let me tell you a little bit about Lima, Peru. That place, man, I'd never want to live there. It's huge, has at least 10 million people. That means terrible traffic problems, and here's something else I don't like about it. It's on the ocean, but it's surrounded by desert, meaning the place is super dry. Very little rainfall, so you've got none of that really nice, lush, sort of subtropical vegetation. So no matter where you go in that city, it's an asphalt and concrete jungle. In a word, ugly. The only place you see any kind of trees and vegetation is in parks, government parks. And even if you walk through one of those and you kick around in the dirt for a while, you'll hit sand. And I found the apartment rentals down there about twice as expensive as they are in big cities in Central America. So what you get for 600 bucks a month in Lima, Peru, you can get for 300 in pretty much any other big city in Latin America that's off the tourist trail. And Lima itself is not really on the tourist trail. People fly in to go to Machu Picchu and stuff, but then they got to take another flight out, a kind of a small jet hopper, which takes around 40 minutes to an hour. And food in Lima, even at the big markets, is much more expensive than in Central America. I'm sure it's because, again, it's very dry and they got that desert surrounding them, so they have to truck everything in from afar. And as to where they get their fresh water, for 10 million people, who knows? It's a desert. That doesn't bode well for the future, I'll tell you. Because as opposed to the rest of Latin America, where the rainy season is so heavy you can collect as much water as you need forever, there's none of that in Lima, Peru. But here's the part I dislike the most about Lima, Peru. Because it's an asphalt jungle and they've got very little vegetation and just some public parks, when you walk out of your hotel or apartment in the morning, you'll see people walking their dogs and such, and those dogs do their thing. And man, even in the nicest neighborhoods, it stinks like urine. The dogs have nowhere else to do it except on cement. It doesn't penetrate and seep downward like it would with regular earth. And because Lima gets very little rainfall, there's no dilution or washing effect that you get in other Latin countries with heavy rainy seasons. Worse yet, they've got a lot of poor indigenous types in Lima, Peru, and like most Latin males do, especially in the underclasses, they see the world as their urinal. And I'll tell you, there's no place in Latin America where I've gotten so many whiffs of human urine. In fact, I'd get knocked over by the stink every time I took a morning walk, even in the nicer neighborhoods. Nope, Lima, Peru for me, too many negatives. But back to Costa Rica. Here's a good time to give you another very good reason why I never recommend living in Costa Rica. Now, you might remember I mentioned I'd lived there for 2.5 years, a long, long time ago, and I got out while the going was good. Here's what you didn't know. There's so much U.S. dollar contamination because their number one industry is tourism that the locals working regular jobs and especially government jobs go on strike like crazy because they see such a discrepancy in the money people in the tourism industry make versus people working regular jobs and useless government jobs. Everyone wants to make more money, but when you're a highly unionized country like Costa Rica, it's easy to rattle the natives and get them to go on strike. For example, did you know, and I'm sure you didn't, that in September of 2018, Costa Rica's labor unions called a national strike, and it lasted 86 days. That included government workers, teachers, and national health care, doctors, nurses, and hospital staff. Now, for all you gringos and expats living in Costa Rica who say their public national health care system's not a total disaster, and in fact, it's not that bad, except for the long waits and long lines, but you can buy your way to the front of the line. Just pay a professional line stander, yeah? That's a career down here. But here's what you didn't know, that in September and October of this year, the numbers are in now from the national health system that during that month or so they were out on strike, 111,000 doctors' appointments were canceled, and the strike caused the suspension and or postponement of 3,502 surgeries. And the point of me telling you all this, well, want to point out that the Costa Ricans will go on strike at the drop of a hat. And it's all due to the secondary effects of the gringoization of the country and the flood of U.S. dollar. I could go into more examples in much more detail about it, but you've heard enough. Now, of course, all Latin countries have their unions, and they do go on strike. But in other countries where tourism is not king, strikes almost never affect gringos and expats. Even when teachers go on strike, the gringos working at those helicopter schools aren't affected because helicopter schools are private. We're talking about public teachers that go on strike. And when government workers go on strike, well, who gives a damn about that? Let them go on strike. That stuff rarely affects gringos and expats, except to add a little more confusion in the streets regarding transportation and more typical delays in paperwork if you're waiting to get something processed. Meanwhile, more bad news out of Brazil. Man, this is hard to believe. Here's an article entitled, Brazil Takes the First Step in Program to Join the Nuclear-Powered Submarine Club. Say, what? Is this real? In a country where 3/4 of the cities don't have sewage treatment plants? They're going to fool around with nuclear subs now? It says here, on Friday, Brazil launched the first of 5 attack submarines built with French technology in a $9 billion program. While the first 4 subs in the group are conventional subs, the 5th will place Brazil in the club of only 6 nations with nuclear-powered subs, the U.S., Russia, France, U.K., China, and India. Oh, yeah, right. Brazil really needs attack subs. Who are they going to attack? And you know, everyone in a nuclear sub club have nuclear bombs, too. Excellent news for Brazil, huh? Won't be going there anytime soon. All right, changing gears, here's something good to know. In the last couple of shows, I was talking about having a job down here in Latin America online, teaching English to Chinese school kids. With that, there have been some recent studies concerning people who can speak 2 languages, bilingual people. Could that be you? Would be an excellent goal to achieve. It says, most importantly, it's been found that people who learn a second language, even in adulthood, can better avoid cognitive decline in old age. Well, we knew that already, but it says, when everything else is controlled for, bilingual people with dementia and or Alzheimer's are afflicted generally 4.5 years later than monolingual people. It says in this article there have been many studies to support this. One such study, Dr. Thomas Beck, a lecturer in the Philosophy, Psychology, and Language Sciences Department at the University of Edinburgh, found that the level of education and intelligence mattered less than learning a second language when it comes to delaying cognitive decline or Alzheimer's. And who knew this? It says those who are bilingual or speak multiple languages also have been shown to be more self-aware spenders, viewing what's called hypothetical and what's called real money. That would be the perceived differences between money on a credit card, which is hypothetical money, and money in cold hard cash. It says here, bilingual people are more astute spenders than monolinguals. In other words, bilinguals rack up less credit card debt than monolinguals. How about that? And if you think it's maybe about being more astute, smarter, higher IQ when you're bilingual, think again. We all know someone or a lot of people. That would be friends, relatives, etc., who in all other aspects are smart, astute, and successful. Yet, they too are often saddled with loads of credit card debt. Much less so, according to this article, than bilingual and multilingual people. Never heard that one before, but it is interesting. And finally, it says, speaking more than one language means you'll have access to all kinds of new words, too. So, the next time you need to, let's say, call your boyfriend, girlfriend, boss, sister, whatever, a or the next time someone cuts you off and you say, fuck that guy on the motorcycle, you can instantly switch languages and have the full intent and feeling of your outrage, but not piss anyone off or start a fight. The worst that can happen is you'll just look a little foolish, blowing off steam in front of people in another language. By the way, I've been there. In fact, you know, when I was a kid, I used to see that all the time. I had a lot of Italian buddies whose parents came from the old country. Man, could they blow off steam in Italian? I didn't know what the hell they were talking about, except the buffongu stuff. And finally, let's talk a bit about gringos doing banking here in Latin America and the problems that could arise. In fact, I can't tell you how many gringos I run into and gringos who send me emails saying, Johnny, I can't get this banking thing. It's crazy, especially off the trail when everything's in Spanish. They say, I've got my account, my passbook, my debit cards, even online access, but I'm having so much trouble doing the simplest of things. Luckily, by the way, even if you're well off the gringo tourist trail, there's always someone at one of the bigger branches of your bank anyway that speaks English. Here's the problem, and let me make this perfectly clear. Every gringo tries to use his Latin bank like he uses his up in the States. That's a mistake. And as for me, I only use my bank to do wire transfers in and out, deposit cash, withdrawal cash at an ATM or whatever. But I don't use it for automatic deductions. In other words, I don't pay my internet bill or utility services or any recurrent monthly bill through automatic deductions from my bank account. Oh yeah, your Latin banks will let you do that, all right? Millions of people do. But man, if you don't speak Spanish, I wouldn't recommend complicating things. Believe me, I know Latin banks. And as for even the better ones, 20-story monuments with glitzy facades, they still occasionally fumble the ball. I say, go ahead, check your account on the internet, but I wouldn't make it too complicated. And I do know many gringos who have their internet, utility, and other bills paid online, through their Latin banks, of course. And every last one of them reports some kind of glitch. I don't mean losing your money, but could be bills not getting paid or you get locked out of your account. So just do the easy and simple things with your Latin bank account. Then little can go wrong. And if it does, you can fix it even with your crap Spanish. You know, this is Latin America. And if there's any kind of hitch or glitch at all, you're for sure going to waste a half a day screwing around in the bank trying to get it fixed. So again, don't get fooled by how nice your bank building looks or how many glitzy ads or promotions you see on billboards or on TV or even pop-up windows on your computers. Yeah. You'll get those, too. They all suffer the same stupid problems. I hear complaints about them all the time. As for wire transfers, they're straightforward enough and easy to do. But only once you get the very first one accomplished, then it's plug and play. It almost never fails. The very first wire transfer you receive or try to do will probably not work for some stupid reason, like you didn't have the phone number of the beneficiary or the phone of their bank or the address of their bank. Truly moronic things like that will hold up a wire transfer. Problem is, sometimes you won't get notified for a couple of days because, you know, wire transfers take a few days, even though they've got your money immediately. There's something really wrong with that. Long live crypto, huh? All right, here's a tip. For wire transfers, take all the information, write it out longhand on paper in big, bold letters like a fourth grader, and hand it to the bank person. No Spanish necessary. You should always try to go to the same one or two persons for all of your stuff. Then they'll get to know you and you'll get preferential treatment. And if you're off the tourist trail, you'll usually get preferential treatment anyway. But even though you have your gringo advantage, you'll play the waiting game. That's just the way it is. Meaning you may get cuts to the front of the line and no one will really care. I've even had a bank teller or two open a side door for me and usher me into a little room, give me coffee, cookies, what they call the VIP treatment. VIP. But still, even if you get preferential treatment, everything they do will take time. In fact, more than once I've been to the front of the line and a lady just closed up and went to lunch. Then what? Well, you grab another number if they're doing the number thing and you get into another maze of a line. That's why I always recommend when you go to a bank, bring some reading material, audiobook or something, but beware, the rental cop will come over and tell you to remove your earbuds. And your baseball cap, by the way, for all you more casual dudes and dudesses. That's when knowing some Spanish comes in handy, because often I'll screw with the rental cop. I'll say something like, you know, it's a good thing you're on the job and checking, because hat bombs are all the rage these days. Of course, they don't get it. Oh, and by the way, when they tell me to remove my earbuds, I do. Though, when they walk away, I put them back in. Funny thing, most of the time, they notice that, but they don't come over and tell you to take them out again. Go figure, huh? So then why do you think they tell you to remove your earbuds? Because, you know, there's always a chance of a sophisticated high-tech heist being coordinated by a slick group of operators on their own earbud channel, right? Yep, that's a big problem. Duh. The truth is, in the last few years anyway, there have practically been no stick-ups inside of banks. They used to do it all the time before smartphones and cheap cameras came around, but these days it's not the banks that get robbed. It's people not paying attention who are walking out with their cash. And that kind of stuff happens almost exclusively with bank branches in crap neighborhoods. Not the ones us gringos and expats hang out and live in. But you knew that already. All right, final plug here. You can still sign up for my January 2019 Expat Insider Seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com. But bring a raincoat because you will be drinking from the fire hose. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.